Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 234, Phoenix Comic-Con 2017. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, well, I'm actually by myself today. I unfortunately was unable to make it to last week's episode with Matt Rushing, which I'm very disappointed about, because I really wanted to get a chance to talk with him, especially about the Jedi. But I was returning home from Phoenix Comic Con, where I actually have some panel audio for you. Myself, Kyle Avery, and Joey Letson, who you've heard on the show before, once again, have a panel from Phoenix Comic Con where we discuss The Last Jedi and the future of Star Wars. So it was a really fun panel. Good discussion, and we had some great interaction with people there. This is our fourth year doing a panel. It's really great because now we've started to see people who come to our panels every year. Recognizing some of the audience members is always really fun. So that's really great. So I'm going to play that panel for you here in just a minute, but I did want to address a couple things that came up during Phoenix Comic Con. You may or may not have seen this, because I know I saw a few people on my Facebook feed, not at Phoenix Comic Con, talking about this, but Phoenix Comic Con is not such a hugely publicized convention that I'm not sure how far any of this got. On Thursday, the first day of the convention, An armed man went into the convention. There's all sorts of stories about, there's the story out there of what he was there to do. He was dressed as the Punisher, was armed with many, many weapons, and I'm not going to get into all the details, and was not mentally well. He was there to confront police, and apparently also, according to court documents, there to finish the job that he started with one of the guests there that he had apparently stabbed 15 years ago, in his own words. Thankfully, police were able to apprehend him before anyone was hurt, before any weapons were fired. He was arrested and taken to prison, thankfully. Now, however, due to the Phoenix Police Department's insistence, Phoenix Comic Con then banned all prop weapons for the rest of the convention. They are going to be reevaluating this, and hopefully, we'll find some way to lift that ban for next year, or for Phoenix Fan Fest later on this year. I think November is when that normally is. We'll see what happens. But they did ban weapons, all prop weapons, for the rest of the convention. And people are forced to come up with very creative ways to get around the ban. Kyle, who was dressed as Kylo Ren on Friday, and his sister, ended up finding some pirates who were making balloon swords and used those as lightsabers for the day. I saw several people apparently have bananas in their holsters or baguettes in their holsters instead of guns. So that was clever. There was a couple of Jedi that I saw walking around, a Barisafi and a generic Jedi walking around, who had signs saying, "The Empire took my lightsaber," or "Sith stole my lightsaber." So that was pretty clever as well. So that was all happening. I was not at the convention when the man went in and was arrested. Thankfully, I was gone. The highlight of Thursday for me was not that. I got my copy of Thrawn, which I still need to start reading, signed by Timothy Zahn. And, of course, the Thursday of the convention was May 25th, the 40th anniversary of Star Wars being released in theaters. So I celebrated that by getting Timothy Zahn to sign my copy of Thrawn, which is really quite awesome. I was actually able to ask him a question that I thought was pretty cool. He has seen all of the Rebels episodes with Thrawn, and so I asked him if he was the one who was writing what happened next for Thrawn after his confrontation with the Bendu, and the warning the Bendu gave him about his end, foreseeing his demise. I asked Thrawn where he would take that, how he would do that. And Timothy Zahn said, well, as with everything, he would consider it. He would weigh his options with it. But he would also consider the source. And he may or may not think the Bendu is a reliable source. So that was an interesting answer, and one that I definitely could see working with Thrawn. We'll have to see whether the show takes it that way. But thankfully, we don't have to wait too much longer for that. I also got my copy of Bloodline signed by Claudia Gray. I was not able to ask her a question because I was the first one in line at 10:30 in the morning. The first one to, you know, be at her table. And so she was still, you know, getting set up and a little tired. So I just said, thank you for coming to Phoenix Comic Con and all that stuff. So I was not able to ask her anything specific about the book. I didn't want to impose that on her. But we did have a great panel. So I'm going to go ahead and play that here momentarily. We had a great crowd. The room was probably about 4/5 full at least. It was very full. And we didn't have very many people walking in and out and leaving the panel, as is something that happens sometimes at these conventions. There is one other little controversy that arose out of the weapons ban involving Ultra Sabers, which Star Wars fans, many Star Wars fans are familiar with that. That's a controversy that is a little bit more in depth, and so I don't want to get into it before the panel. So if you're curious about that, I'm going to save my discussion on the Ultra Sabers controversy after the panel. If you don't care about it, if you don't want to listen to it, you can just turn the podcast off after the panel, and you will be none. You won't have to worry about having to deal with that. So before I play the panel, remember, if you want to get in contact with us, you can always do that on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. You can tweet us at WampusLair or email us at WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much. Please leave us a rating and review on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, wherever you find our lovely little podcast. We greatly, greatly do appreciate that. So without any further ado, here is the Phoenix Comic Con 2017 panel titled The Last Jedi and the Future of Star Wars, featuring myself, Kyle Avery, and Joey Letson. Thank you. Hope you enjoy.
Yeah, who talks first? Do you talk first? I talk first?
I think it's, I don't know. It's you.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started, folks, a few seconds early, because we're just like that. We want to get as much done in this as we possibly can.
Because there's way more to talk about than we have time for.
Exactly. As I'm sure many of you realize, once you guys get into a Star Wars conversation, it can last for hours and hours. And we only have one. So let's go ahead and get started right now. We are here to talk about The Last Jedi, that is premiering this December. And also just the future of Star Wars. Yeah.
Yes.
The future of Star Wars in general. And joining me are two podcasters right here from two Star Wars podcasts. And I myself am from an Animaniacs podcast, which happens to talk about Star Wars pretty much every episode, just coincidentally, because when you're a Star Wars fan, it's hard not to.
Right.
But go and introduce yourselves, folks.
Started. Okay. My name's Kyle Avery. I'm from the Star Wars The Saga Continues podcast. We talk a lot about this same kind of stuff, the future of Star Wars, the new movies coming out. Me and my co-host Tim, we have a lot of fun talking about this kind of stuff. Do some long marathon episodes. We're also huge fans of Star Wars Battlefront, so we talk a lot about the gaming and all that kind of stuff as well. And we will, I think at the end of the show, give out our contact info, and you can follow us on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Although if any of you want to follow us now while we're waiting to get started, it's Star Wars TSC on Twitter, and we tweet out a bunch of news stories and all that kind of stuff. So,
okay. Hi, my name is Jason. I'm from the Wampa's Lair podcast. We are not a news podcast. We are more of a discussion-based podcast. We actually recently did a whole episode devoted to Maul, which was really fun. We had one of our listeners on, and she can talk Maul better than anyone else I know. Yeah. And then we actually just released an episode this week, which is a commentary for Star Wars A New Hope in honor of the 40th anniversary. So,
yeah. And like I said, my name is Joey, and one of the hosts of the Animaniacast. The other host is right in front of me, my brother. So we host the podcast with our friend Kelly, who is all the way in Georgia, and we just talk about every single episode of the Animaniacs in the order in which they were released, and we talk about all the cultural references and gags. And we have a lot of fun with that. So if you're into Animaniacs, come see me after the show. So right now, however, we're going to be talking about, of course, Star Wars The Last Jedi. But before we do, a year from now, ladies and gentlemen, we will be seeing the Han Solo standalone film. So we figure we might as well talk a little bit about what to expect next year. So the untitled Star Wars standalone film, they have not given it an official title yet, is directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. The writers were Lawrence Kasdan and his son, John Kasdan. And it's starring, among many other people, Alden Ehrenreich, Donald Glover, Woody Harrelson, Emily Clark, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Jonas Sutamo?
How do you pronounce it?
Eunice Sutamo, who is Chewbacca right now. Peter Mayhew is
retired
from the role, at least in an active role like that. And there's some other ones that are not shown in this cast picture. Michael Kenneth Williams, who I loved in Boardwalk Empire, and I believe he's also in The Wire. And then there's Thandie Newton, who is in ER and Westworld and things like that as well. So really exciting kind of film right there. Not too much information about this film has been released.
No, and honestly, I'm kind of just sort of like, eh, about it, because I don't know what's going on. I haven't seen anything. Everything has been so hush-hush about this movie, other than, hey, we cast some people. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So I'm like, yes.
Yeah. And we don't really have any stories or details about the story. Don't really know what to expect from it. But it's a story about the early days of Han and Chewie and Lando. How can that not be a whole lot of fun?
So exactly.
I'm looking forward to it.
So will we see Han win the Falcon from Lando? Maybe. Will we see them, Han meet Chewie for the first time? Perhaps.
Maybe.
We don't really know. I mean, you think like they would have said something at Star Wars Celebration, but it was pretty mute.
Yeah.
They do have a, you know, just like Return of the Jedi was called Blue Harvest, the Han Solo running title right now is Red Cup. Which if you've ever drank out of a Solo cup, yeah. You know why. See what they're doing.
Everybody gets it. I was slow on the uptake too.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there's some TMZ, luckily thanks to TMZ who snuck in some little set photos, we can see a little bit of what the picture is going to look like a little bit. Han is kind of in a different sort of outfit. You can see Alden right there has a, you know, Han Solo-ish hair. And there's a lot of these vehicles right here with
Look Back to the Future, yeah. Mad Max.
I like calling that one on the bottom the 70s Cadillac book speeder.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think it looks like a Batman mixed with a Schick razor or something like that. Batmobile. I don't know. But obviously these have wheels on them, and one could assume that you know, the wheels will be taken out in post. There is a lot of stuff going on in the comics and the books right now dealing with Han Solo as a racer.
Yes.
And about his racing past and what he did in the, you know, racing ships later on. So this is probably going to tie in, I'm assuming, in some little part there.
We might get pod racing.
That'd be cool.
And everyone just went silent.
Yes. I would love pod racing. That's got to hurt.
I thought you had to be an alien or a Jedi to do that.
Oh, that's true.
Yes.
Well, Anakin's the only human who can do it.
Exactly.
Well, until Solo.
And of course, there's also a ton of concept art if you're really interested in the Han Solo film, the kind of out of context concept art that may or may not be in the film. Some guy found a bunch of it somehow and put a bunch of it on eBay. So of all places.
So question its authenticity?
Yeah. But it's up on the internet's there and you can check it out if you like. You know, some interesting stuff. But what we are here to talk about first and foremost is Star Wars The Last Jedi.
So that was 5 minutes of the future of Star Wars part of this panel.
Exactly.
The Last Jedi, the immediate future.
The future is bright indeed, right, Kyle?
Yes.
But,
it is.
Obviously we're going to get a Star Wars film at least once a year until the foreseeable future.
Yes. For the rest of this decade.
Yes, because we don't really know what's happening when it comes to standalone films after Han Solo right now.
There's, we know there is another one that's been announced, that they have another one in the works, but we don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I'm crossing my fingers for Obi-Wan.
Yes.
And
a lot of people, Boba Fett does not need his own movie. He needs to be the villain in the Han Solo movie.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. But they also did say there was another standalone movie that was supposed to come out before the Han Solo one that was being directed by Josh Trank, and then he left the project, and now it's kind of being reworked. But then I don't know if it was officially announced or if this just kind of came out through rumors or whatever, but that was going to be a Boba Fett movie.
Yeah.
So they know that a lot of people want to see that too, so I think that's something that we'll still probably see at some point. Yeah, well, Jason doesn't. But
that just shows hands up. If you would like to, let's say, Boba Fett versus Obi-Wan.
Who?
How many people would rather see an Obi-Wan film? Raise your hand. Yeah. Okay.
Hang on. Let's tweet that picture to Lucasfilm.
And how many people, just out of curiosity once again, would rather see a Boba Fett film? There you go. So you can see, it's either way, it's more Star Wars, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, if we get both, are there really any losers in that debate?
No, yes. I don't think so. Video games, movies, bring it all in. So without further ado, we're going to just go ahead and show the trailer. Just
who wants a Knights of the Old Republic Netflix series?
Yes!
Yes! About decent size right there.
All right. If you will turn your attention to the screen, we're showing the trailer. Out of curiosity, everyone has seen that, right? Was this the first time anybody has seen this trailer? Oh, a handful of you.
It's playing again.
And luckily it's playing again. We'll watch it one more time. I'm kidding. Thank you, Ray. All right. So, it's very exciting stuff going on right there in the world of Star Wars. And let's just go over some of the facts right here. Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, directed by Rian Johnson, releasing December 15th of this year, 2017. And among other things, it's interesting to note that this film is essentially taking part immediately following the events of The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Whereas every other Star Wars film, you usually have at least a year or two or three or 10.
Or 30.
between episodes. This is like, here's your saber, and let's start the movie.
Right.
Once again.
So, Rey's been standing there for 2 years now.
So, OMG, Luke talking about the Jedi. It's time for the Jedi to end.
What?
Some people believe that that's a mislead.
Well,
that's some of the things we need to talk about, because what the heck is Luke, do you think, possibly talking about with this?
We're jumping into that right now.
Why the heck not?
Why the heck not?
Okay.
Because it's kind of the big thing. That the whole thing ends, it's time for the Jedi.
Yeah. No, and again, for now, we're just going to take this at face value, because obviously it's a trailer. They could be recutting things. There could be things in here that don't make it into the final movie, but I feel like that's a pretty big tagline at the end of the trailer for something that would, you know, have something that would end up having no bearing on the movie, you know, when it finally comes out. That would be a pretty big misdirect there. So if we go based on the assumption that Luke is actually thinking something in that direction, like, why would he want the Jedi to end? Well, obviously, he's on this planet where in The Force Awakens, they said he had gone looking for the last Jedi temple. You see,
the first Jedi temple.
Yeah, what'd I say, the last?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, he's not on Coruscant. So we went looking for the first Jedi temple. We see in this book, he looks like in the trailer, he's got some kind of book that he looks like he's dusting off with maybe some ancient Jedi knowledge and stuff inside. So clearly he has learned some things that we don't know yet about the Force, about the Jedi, as Rey is talking about the balance between the two. So I think Luke has a new perspective that we're not aware of. So I don't think it's just like, oh, time to give up. Like, the Jedi have failed. We're done. I think it's like, let's change the game. Let's stop looking at this in terms of just light side and dark side, Jedi and Sith. Maybe there's more to all this. And so I think he's maybe talking about it's time to move on to something beyond the Jedi Order as we've known it in the past.
Well, the big question is, and let's take this at face value for the sake of discussion, if it is time for the Jedi to end and he says, that's it, we're done with the Jedi, what takes its place?
Not gray Jedi, that's for sure.
No, because the thing is, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. And if you're like, well, we took away the Sith are destroyed, and it looks like Knights of Ren rose up in their place, possibly. So if the Jedi leave, the Jedi are gone, what happens next? Because will the Knights of Ren try and take over that? Will something else rise up? Does Luke have a plan for that? Maybe? I don't know. We're only getting, like, minuscule snapshots into this movie, and it's driving me nuts because it's a teaser, and I do not like to be teased.
Yeah. Yes. And of course, there also is the possibility too, and I don't really like this idea because this is more just sort of the simple thing that I think would maybe degrade Luke's character a bit, but you know, there's the possibility that he's been living on this island for years by himself, and he's like, I tried to build up the Jedi Order, Kylo Ren wrecked it all, I've failed, you know, I'm just going into exile, let's just give up the whole thing, we don't need the Jedi anymore, and then Rey, the whole story is then Rey finds him and she's like, hey, let's change that, you know, she changes Luke's mind and has to kind of convince him to come back and be a Jedi again, and that's sort of his redemptive story arc, if you will. But I really like the idea of Luke having all this ancient Jedi knowledge and stuff, and like, let's do something different. Let's, you know, put into use like these long forgotten ancient secrets about the balance of the Force and do something different than just Jedi and Sith.
Well, it could be the Order as a construct ends, and the Jedi go back to being sort of nomadic samurai wandering the galaxy.
So we shall see. But as you mentioned right there, there is a vacuum of, you know, you take those things away, there's
a
vacuum.
We will have time for questions.
Oh, yes. By the way, we specifically put about hopefully at least 10 minutes into this panel for any questions, comments, things like that. So we'll go forward. Speaking of vacuum, when you talk about power vacuums in Star Wars, at the end of the first, a New Hope, the Empire doesn't get blown up completely. I guess it kind of did with the Death Star, but
it's not as big as this. Weapon.
Because right here we have, not only is the Republic gone, the home of the Republic is gone.
Yes.
And the First Order's huge thing. The thing that they put all their eggs into one basket, essentially, we could think, right? Mm-hmm. With Starkiller Base. Bong, goom, gone.
Boom.
So right now, one of the things you could definitely say we're going to be seeing in the upcoming movie is the scramble for power, one would assume, because not only does the resistance need to, you know, get as many troops as they can in order, but the First Order will be, I'm sure, trying to gather as many planets and take over them to get the power that they need to keep going. Now, there are some rumors of, you know, the First Order having some, obviously some stuff in reserve, that they'll still be a very formidable force, so we don't have to worry about them not having anything.
Yeah.
But this will be an interesting kind of situation, never seen before in any of the other movies.
Yeah, it definitely seems like, I mean, like you said, they're both kind of scrambling to pick up the pieces. They're both kind of been knocked back on their heels. But from just sort of the things we've heard so far, it does kind of sound like the First Order maybe has a bit of an advantage here where, I mean, their Starkiller base got destroyed. And, you know, it's similar to, like you said, if the Empire lost the Death Star, it's like, well, that's our main weapon. That was kind of the fulcrum of our assault, or, you know, our sort of plans for galactic domination. But at the same time, they wiped out the capital systems of the Republic, and the Resistance was really the only group that was willing to do anything about the First Order. The Republic had their own military that was just kind of like a peacekeeping force, and like, eh, we don't really need to worry about those guys. That's all been wiped out now. And so, while
one can assume they have, you know, reserves around the galaxy,
right,
as well.
Exactly. But you could see in this shot, in The Force Awakens, where the Hosnian system gets destroyed, there's like a big fleet kind of in orbit around the system that also gets wiped out by the explosion. And obviously you've still got the Resistance, but they have, you know, very limited troops and ships and stuff. And so they're obviously going to be trying to gather reinforcements and whatnot. And it's like, while the Republic is scrambling and going, oh crap, like we didn't even realize these guys were a threat, we need to do something about this, the First Order is now going, okay, well, they wiped out our big gun, but we've still, like, we basically cut the head off the body of their leadership and take whatever forces we've got left and kind of press our advantage here.
One can assume that the First Order has the advantage,
yeah,
going into The Last Jedi, just simply because of the situation.
Oh.
I would think.
It's always better when a story wise, when the bad guy is in,
yes,
charge too.
Of course, this is the yeah, middle movie of the trilogy. This is where everything goes south.
Yes.
Again, you know, although how things can get much farther south than patricide, I'm not sure.
Well, at the,
I,
and of
I
course,
saw a shirt downstairs yesterday that says, if Luke dies, we riot. Like, yeah, I need me one of those.
No more.
Well, the thing is, if Luke dies, he can just come back as a Force ghost.
That's true.
True.
All sparkly, glowy.
Yeah. We didn't riot after Star Wars when Obi-Wan got hit, so you never know.
Anyway. Yeah. All right.
So, at the top of those, we have Snoke and Leia. Leia, in this particular movie, apparently has a larger part than in Episode 7, which is nice to see. And there are some rumors that, who knows, we might actually get to see Snoke in his corporeal non-hologram form. So we'll have to see about that. What do you guys think? Let's get this out of the way. Snoke.
New character,
character. You mean Darth Plagueis the
Wise? I'm going to strangle you on this stage in front of everybody.
So yes, there's.
I'm a half-hearted believer in the Snoke theory. I just think it would be cool. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen, but I love to troll Jason about it because he hates it.
I do.
Yes,
we so
walked
much
out of The Force Awakens and said, "Did you hear the theory that Snoke is Plagueis?"
And I nearly flipped my lid.
Oh, yeah. What?
I've never seen him that visibly angry
before. Yeah, it's been very upsetting. But yeah, so. So, you know, more than likely, Snoke is Snoke.
Yes.
A brand new character, you know, and as we go through some additional new characters, we're going to see that, you know, it doesn't always have to be related to somebody new, or somebody in the past, I should say. They could just be somebody new and an interesting new character that we know nothing about. But that's why we watch these movies, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
We're expanding the universe. We don't need everyone to be related to everybody.
Well,
then it just gets weird, and you have situations where Leia kisses Luke, and that's just awkward.
Well, expanding the universe, we have new planets in this movie. We have the planet Crait right here, which we saw briefly in the trailer with the red sand getting picked up by these ships who, I'm not exactly sure why they're skimming the surface that much. It almost looks like they're kind of crashing. I'm really curious about the scene to see what the heck is going on.
Yeah.
We do know that Crait is the planet where there apparently used to be an old rebel base on this planet. And obviously it looks like the Resistance and the First Order, which you can see way in the distance of this shot, some AT-ATs or AT-ATs.
But, styled walkers.
Yeah, on steroids perhaps, though, because word is that these walkers are much bigger and badder than before. Of course, that's what you always have to do in
these
movies.
There were actually a couple leaked pictures yesterday from like some Lego sets where they had of the new Imperial walkers.
If you want to see what the ships and things like that are going to possibly look like, now is a great time to start looking at
Lego
toy
sets.
Stuff. Because like Kylo Ren's TIE Fighter or ship at least has been kind of out. It looks kind of TIE Fighter-ish.
So, no spoilers.
I know so many things that I'm like, I'm trying not to spoil things for everyone in here. If you want to talk about it later, come up here and talk to me. I'll talk to you about it. but, you know, this should be, so who knows what we're going to see right here. You know, perhaps some weapons, some supplies, something that these folks are trying to get.
And it's supposedly a mining world too, which is why it's got, you know, very mineral rich. It's like that rocky white surface with the red sand underneath that these ships are kicking up, and they're supposed to be like repurposed old mining vehicles that they're trying to use to attack these walkers now, because that's all the Resistance has left.
Hmm. And the space battles are back, which is awesome. They were sorely missed in the Force.
Back in Battlefront 2.
Yeah. we obviously had the Battle of Scarif, above, you know, Scarif that is. Great space battles there in Rogue One.
Did anybody like Rogue One in here? Oh,
yeah. Rogue
How awesome
One
was that?
Amazing.
Oh my gosh.
It blew away the continuity though.
We'll talk about that later with your things about continuity things. So nice to see that we're getting some battles, and as we saw in the trailer as well, Poe Dameron's X-wing, if he doesn't get,
he cannot keep an X-wing to save his life.
That guy's ship got blown up
when they blow up.
Oh my gosh! I'm reading the Poe Dameron comic, and I love that X-wing. I just think it's the coolest thing. So when that thing gets blown up in the trailer, I'm going, no! It looks so cool.
The trailer was like just crushing all of our hopes and dreams as far as stuff that we love from the first movie. They blow up Poe Dameron's X-wing. Kylo Ren's helmet is shattered on the floor. It's like, can we keep some cool stuff for more than one movie?
Nope. Yes.
They're pulling a Darth Maul on us.
Smashy.
The sigh from the room that was like, oh man, too soon, bro.
But of course, the main thing that at least I'm looking forward to more than the space battles, more than all these things, is the training of Rey. Rey, of course, was the major protagonist in The Force Awakens, and I think we're really supposed to be following her journey more than anyone else's in these movies. And so Daisy Ridley at Celebration Orlando recently said, you know, that we'll learn more about Rey's character in this movie.
Yes.
And that one of the things that Rey will find is that as she goes to the planet Octu or
Octo. Or Achu. Bless you.
Whatever planet Luke's on right there with the first Jedi temple, is that she will find that the heroes are sometimes not all you think they're cracked up to be, or who you think they're going to be, something like that. Basically, Luke isn't.
Don't meet your heroes.
Yeah. Don't meet your heroes.
Which makes sense right from the trailer, too. I mean, we don't really know much about Luke's personality or maybe how he's changed over the years, but just from the fact that she goes there expecting to meet this great legendary Jedi and he says, it's time for the Jedi to end. Like, that's probably not what she was expecting when she went there.
Exactly. Well, we do know that obviously from the trailer, I mean, that Luke does kind of, if not reluctantly, you know, do some training things with her. So right there, I love this shot because, you know, Rey is right there swinging the lightsaber away and Luke is kind of looking down, and I'm not quite sure if he's sad or what, but I just love the shot of him kind of like looking down. Vanity Fair recently released some shots.
Like this week.
Yes.
Some amazing,
which was amazing,
images.
Amazing things. And it's a fantastic article. Rey will be doing some fantastic, you know, I love this shot in the trailer of her running. This looks like a baton to me. Just don't catch that baton in that race right there. I don't think you'll like it.
Nope.
We'll see some Jedi knowledge. I mean, there's this I could not tell from the trailer at first, but this is a bookshelf of some sort with some old
ancient texts.
Ancient text. Yeah. They figured out in Star Wars universe how to keep paper from not disintegrating over thousands of years. So that's very good.
It's very impressive.
This is kind of a wooded kind of structure of some sort that's holding this bookcase. And we do know perhaps a little bit about where they are at this point, because some hooligans snuck into the set of episode 8 about a year ago or so, jumped on top of the Millennium Falcon and took a picture of this interesting tree in the distance right there. So this, some are calling Force Tree or something like that, is probably where Luke is at that moment when he's saying it's time for the Jedi to end. It looks very kind of wooden. So perhaps Luke is living in there, or maybe perhaps it's just a kind of a similarity to the cave or the tree in The Empire Strikes Back, where, you know, Luke having to go in there. We really don't know, but other than it looks pretty darn cool. Some people have thought that it might be one of the trees that was seen in the comic book Shattered Empire. But
unless trees go really, really fast on Ahch-To,
that's a really old looking tree.
Yeah, that's a really old looking tree right there. So, looks and cool. So,
here's one of the Vanity Fair covers. That's fantastic.
So, let me say, guys, what are you interested in seeing when it comes to Luke and Rey together on the island? What are you looking forward to seeing? What are you hoping to see?
All of it. I mean, I thought you were going to ask what are we most excited to see in the movie in general, and I was going to say I'm looking forward to this just for seeing Luke again, seeing how these past 30 years have changed him. Obviously, we saw him for like 10 seconds at the end of The Force Awakens, didn't get to really see any of his character or anything, so I'm really excited for that. But then, yeah, seeing the training dynamic between them. And I think the thing that gets me most excited in the trailer is when he's telling her to reach out with the Force, and he says, what do you see? She says, the light, the dark, the balance. And he says, there's so much more, or it's so much bigger. And I'm like, well, so much bigger than what? Like, there's so much more to what? What new stuff about the Force are we going to learn in this movie through Luke and through him teaching Rey? That's what I'm most excited about. I want to see Kylo Ren again. I want to see Poe Dameron again and the Resistance fighting the First Order and all that kind of stuff. But I feel like I could watch a 2-hour movie just about Luke training Rey and just dropping some Jedi knowledge on her. So,
Jason.
What I'm most excited about is to really figure out what's gone on with Luke. Because we kind of have the idea that, you know, he tried to start the new Jedi Order. Han says that he tried to start the new Jedi Order, but it was destroyed when a student turned against him. And we assume that that student was Ben Solo, aka Kylo Ren. And I'm really curious to see what changed. Because he's obviously tried to, you know, pass on what you learned, like Yoda said, in the end of Return of the Jedi, in a more traditional sense for the Jedi. But what changed? Why did the destruction of his order bring him here? Bring him to this point of it's time for the Jedi to end? Mm-hmm. I need to know, because if he's just going, well, I'm mad and sad and this is just stupid and I give up, then I'm going to be like, no, sir.
So, well, one of the things that really got J.J. Abrams interested in making the Star Wars and Force Awakens in the first place was the question, who is Luke Skywalker?
And I love that that's what drew him. That's basically how Kathleen Kennedy convinced him to direct The Force Awakens, was by saying, hey, you get to address the question of who is Luke Skywalker. And then in J.J.'s movie, Luke's in it for 10 seconds.
Exactly.
And doesn't say anything.
But we will hopefully get some answers of who is Luke Skywalker. I mean, let's face it. Luke, when it comes to trauma in one's life, he's gone through a lot. I mean, you fall in love with Sody, you find out they're a sister, your dad is Hitler, and then he's good again. And
then you watch him turn good and then throw actual Hitler down a shaft, and then
exactly.
You have to escape in an exploding space station and say goodbye to your dad who wasn't Hitler.
And then everything gets good, and then everything goes bad. So, yeah. Luke, I'd like to
Luke
see
Luke has been on an emotional roller coaster.
Very,
his entire
very much.
Life.
So it's going to be very interesting to see.
Kissed his sister, fought his dad, been betrayed by his nephew. Poor guy.
At the end of The Force Awakens, I left that film thinking there's a connection between Luke and Rey, right? Rey, I was like, oh, Rey is Luke's daughter. I mean, obviously, it's Rey is Luke's daughter, and I left the theater thinking that way. But now I'm not so sure. So I have a question for you guys out there. How many of you believe that Rey is most likely Luke's daughter? Raise your hand. Not that many. How many used to think that way? Some more. Okay. Now, how many people think that Rey could be related to Obi-Wan?
Yeah.
Quite
wow.
a few. How many people?
Nope.
How many people just think Rey is just, she's, her parents are just some people that doesn't really, just brand new characters. We've never seen them before, and not that many.
Anybody still think she's a Solo?
About a little bit more. Interesting. So the questions of Rey and her parentage will be addressed. Daisy Ridley apparently knows who the parents are, which is nice.
She pointedly did not answer those questions at Star Wars Celebration in April.
Well, she obviously didn't answer those questions, but Daisy Ridley has said in interviews on multiple occasions that she's kind of surprised that there's such a debate over who Rey's parents are, because she says, when I read the script for The Force Awakens for the first time, it was obvious to me. Like who Rey's parents were. And so I keep getting myself all twisted up in knots trying to think, well, it's obvious because of who? Like you've got Luke's lightsaber, and Maz Kanata says, you know, this lightsaber was Luke's and his father's before him, and now it calls to you. I'm like, so she's Luke's daughter. But then she's in the Millennium Falcon with Han. She knows how to work it, like she's been flying it her whole life. They're finishing each other's sentences. I'm like, she's Han's daughter. Which one is it?
Obviously Snoke's daughter.
Oh, no.
Well, Darth Plagueis
You come back here.
Plagueis could create life.
Okay, well, Jason's gone for right now. We're going to go ahead and continue on without him, I suppose. Since Jason was feeling this, let's talk about the dark side, of course.
Wasn't his lightsaber cut up in the last movie?
It sure looked like it.
So, yes.
But you know what? The lightsaber continuity is not something that they're real strict on in the Star Wars movies.
Oh, you're back. Welcome back.
I mean,
have a brisk walk around.
Yes.
You know,
okay,
Obi-Wan Kenobi, Darth Maul kicks his lightsaber down that pit in the Phantom Menace. Obi-Wan's got the same lightsaber in episode 2. General Grievous, if you look closely at the four of his lightsaber hilts that he uses, like Anakin and Obi-Wan's are two of those hilts, but they've got like green blades. They're like, oh, people won't notice. So I'm not surprised that Kylo Ren's coming back with the same lightsaber, which I'm okay with because it looks cool.
He just goes to Radio Shack.
It did look like Rey cut it in half at the end of The Force Awakens.
Yeah. And of course, we'll mention it real quick. Jason doesn't want me to talk about it, sorry. But yeah, his scar is slightly moved. And why did they do that?
Because it looks cooler.
It just looked cooler. His scar is very slightly moved to the side.
Which, as a filmmaker myself, I'm okay with that. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm sure, you know, when J.J. Abrams had him get that scar at the end of The Force Awakens, it was like, oh man, this is just going to look gnarly, like Rey really jacked him up. And then Rian Johnson was doing his screen test and whatever for episode 8 and been like,
That looks terrible.
Yeah. No, you just put some back to water in the sink. You just, you know, splash it on your face.
Put some back to water
and
your
then,
scar will
and then
move
it just
over to
moves a little bit. It's fine. It's Star Wars. But of course we have.
He looks a lot like Anakin with that scar.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yep. Well.
Cosmetic surgery to look like granddad.
And of course we have Kylo holding, his costume is slightly different in here. He may not really be wearing the mask that much, as we saw from the trailer. If it's smashed, then we may be seeing Adam Driver's lovely face a little bit more. I'm sure my wife will be happy with that. But a cape that looks very much like Darth Vader's cape. So, you know, went to Grandpa's closet, pulled that out, and put it on, perhaps. Yeah.
What I like about Kylo Ren is I feel like we're essentially seeing what dark side Anakin could have been if Obi-Wan hadn't chopped all his limbs off.
Yeah. Interesting point, yeah. And of course we have
it's unfortunate that happens.
Yes.
When one loses all of your limbs, when you turn evil.
Yeah.
And Phasma's back. She got out of the garbage compactor or whatever they threw her in on Starkiller Base.
Trash compactor.
Trash compactor. We'll find out exactly how she got out of the planet before it exploded on an upcoming comic book and book, even perhaps coming
She's
in the fall.
She's got a comic miniseries and a novel coming out this year.
Yeah.
Prior to Last Jedi coming out. So
now, what I'm excited about in this is for the Vanity Fair pictures. She has a new weapon, this little pike or stick or whatever, spear. And her helmet's off in this. I'm really hoping that this does mean that we'll see Phasma without her helmet on for this,
and we'll see her for more than 2 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. That's even more important for me, I think. Yeah. Because if you look closer at this shot, you know, she does look apparent, like on her right side of her face, she has a little bit of a scowl. Some people are thinking there's a little bit of cosmetic makeup on her right there. So usually, you know, in my experience, they don't, you know, for the Force Awakens, they took a picture of Adam Driver right there without his helmet, and people were still saying that Kylo Ren was Luke, even though they showed him without the helmet. So I'm hoping that the same thing is going to go on here with Phasma, that they're showing her without the helmet to say, sneak peek, we'll see her without the helmet. We'll see. But we also have Poe. Poe Dameron's back.
Who raided Han Solo's closet this time.
Yeah, Poe is apparently raiding...
carrying on the tradition of Lando.
Yes, Lando steals Han's stuff, and now Poe's like, hey, good stuff in here. So he's wearing a jacket very similar to Han's. And Finn is back wearing that same jacket from before, and it will be mended up and running around doing his own adventure as well. I'm hoping he mended up his jacket as well, because of course that got split in half as well, but whatever. And
sure,
they're
the
joined.
Resistance just mass produces.
There's a mass produced jacket. And of course they're joined by a brand new character, whose name is Rose Tico, I believe, or Tycho. We don't really know exactly the pronounced last name, but she's played by Kelly Marie Tran. And apparently, like, Rose will also have a sister named Paige in the movie as well. Rose is a resistance maintenance worker and will be going on about a little adventure while Luke and Rey are doing their thing. It will be Rose and Finn together having an adventure together. And there's been some talk about them possibly having a little romantic adventure as well. Who knows? Maybe Finn will finally find love.
Leaked set photos of them riding on some kind of like space horse thing through a city together.
Yes.
Space horse.
Going through a space horse.
Some kind of alien creature horse looking thing.
Yes. And so the Rose and Finn will most likely be on this city. I don't know if it says the city, Canto Bite, which is a casino city. I don't know if that's, you know, the whole
high-end casino.
Yes. We don't really know the planet. It would be interesting to see an entire planet that's a casino, but at least it's the city. I don't know about you guys, but the aliens in this
look like Doctor Who.
Yeah. They don't look like Star Wars aliens. They look cool. But yeah, it looks like an episode of Doctor Who that I'm watching.
They raided the Doctor Who closet.
I'm waiting for the, you know, what's her face in the background to say, moisturize me in the background.
Oh my gosh.
But we have like all these characters. I would kill to see a Rodian. Give me a Rodian. I didn't get one Rodian in the last movie, and I'm seeing lots of cool aliens, but let's mix them up, right? I mean, what do you guys think about the alien designs that we have right here?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a huge sticking point for me because obviously, I mean, I love the background characters of Star Wars, the alien species, the atmosphere of all of it. But as I said, this movie could be 2 hours of Luke and Rey sitting in the tree on Octo talking about the Force, and I would love it. But yeah, I mean, it's cool to get new alien designs. I always love when they throw that kind of new stuff in there. But at the same time, it is a little jarring, a little weird maybe when we don't see, you know, a single Rodian or Twi'lek or, I'm blanking on some, you know, Zabrax or whatever, like the common alien species, the ones that you always get to play as in the video games and stuff like that, you know, the ones that kind of everybody knows that you expect to see somewhere in Star Wars, because for the first 6 movies, it's like there would be one that was a fighter pilot, or you'd see one sitting in the cantina or, you know, whatever. Like, it's a big galaxy, so there's a lot more aliens out there that we haven't seen, I'm sure, but it is still kind of nice to bring that familiarity and see, you know, a few of them scattered here and there. It's a little weird that they seem to be trying to evoke so much of the feeling of the original trilogy with the ships and whatnot. It's like, this is set 30 years later, but they're still going to be using X-Wings and TIE fighters that look exactly the same, but all the Rodians have died out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love a lot of the alien designs from the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. I like some of the ones from the sequel trilogy. I may just not be used to them yet. I will grant that. I haven't had as much time to hang out with them yet. But whenever they would introduce new aliens in the, you know, the prequel trilogy. They always had classic aliens there too. So I'm just like, well, we're getting a whole bunch of new aliens in episode 7 and now episode 8. Where's the old guys? You know, I miss them. You know, it's, I don't mind getting new stuff, but I miss the old guys.
Marvel Comics is doing a great job right now of mixing the old and the new together in the same universe. So if you're looking for, like, you know, a blending of that, check out the Marvel Comics. They're doing a good job at that. Well, a couple more new characters right here. We have Benicio del Toro. They have not announced his character's name other than they say that his nickname is DJ. And they told us that it would be obvious why they call him DJ on set when we see the movie. Perhaps he likes to mix things up or turn the tables.
Or he walks in with Star-Lord's headphones, you know.
You never know. Well,
and I'm forgetting the name now, but I heard a rumor that he actually was playing somebody who Han Solo name dropped in The Force Awakens when he's talking about with Rey about all the smugglers who had stolen the Millennium Falcon.
That would be cool.
I think maybe it was like Duquesne or somebody like that.
Maybe.
His character.
Again, some people said, like, that's Boba Fett's son. Probably not, but
Rey might be a Skywalker, but not every new character in this movie is going to be related to somebody else.
Exactly. And then we have Laura Dern, who plays Vice Admiral Amelyn Holdo, who is a resistance leader. And there's going to be kind of a power struggle, perhaps, with her, Leia, and probably Poe is involved a little bit, too, in there. So she's looking very much like a Coruscant kind of elite person right there.
Yeah, she would fit very well in the Senate.
Yes.
And Leia is fed up with the
And
Senate,
also so. In that casino city. But I'm like, yes. She looks very eccentric for a resistance admiral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, true.
But
we'll see what we'll see what she's up to.
Well, the main thing that's, you know, kind of a question, and I love this picture. So we have obviously the passing of Carrie Fisher. Now, Carrie Fisher did film all of her scenes for The Last Jedi. And in fact, was not killed off in The Last Jedi, at least in the original cut, because she basically said at the end of the filming, I better have a bigger role in episode 9. And Kathleen Kennedy said she would have. It would have been Han's movie, episode 7, Luke, episode 8, and Leia, episode 9. They've come out and said that Leia will not be CGI in the next film, which really, in my mind, leads to just a couple options. Number one, you could recast Leia, or number two, you could kill Leia off.
I'm not happy with either of those options. Yes. I would be okay with them CGIing because it's Leia and we need her.
What do you think, Kyle?
I think it kind of raises an ethical question, though, about the people behind these characters, and you don't want to, I mean, I thought what they did in Rogue One was great. At least in concept, in execution, I wasn't like 100% happy with it, because I'm a film guy, and I could tell a couple shots Tarkin was like, he doesn't quite look human there, but, I mean, it's cool that they can do that, but at the same time, I was just going, man, this is going to become a really worrying trend if, like, every actor that dies, you can just keep making movies with them and make digital puppets that look like them because it's Hollywood and they just want to keep making money off of famous people. So I'm glad that they're not doing that with Leia in episode 9, just because I feel like that would kind of lead down a dangerous little rabbit hole there.
Dark path, forever will it dominate your destiny.
Exactly. Well, at least if they were to just like replace her as if nothing had happened and be like, oh, let's just give Leia a big role in this movie. I would be okay if it was something like they did with Paul Walker in like The Fast and the Furious, where he had like mostly finished filming and they used kind of a mix of stand-ins and CGI to kind of just complete his role and give him a fitting ending and kind of send him off into the sunset. If they did something like that with Leia for episode 9, where it was like doing some CGI shots just for the sake of wrapping up her story and giving her kind of a reduced role, I would kind of be okay with that. But if it felt like, oh, hey, like it's almost like Carrie Fisher is still here because they just use CGI Leia for the whole thing, like they could definitely take that too far. So.
Yeah, the main thing I always like Carrie may be gone, but I want in my heart, I want Princess Leia to keep living on. You know, this is a fantasy world where I want, you know, things to be a little different than they are here on Earth. So I would love this to be like, you know, Princess Leia can continue. And I just love this shot because, we're probably not going to get a shot similar to this in episode 8. I mean, with Luke and Leia,
they may not actually meet in the movie.
Yeah. So it's just like one of those things that's bittersweet. That's for certain.
I mean, it is possible they may not meet in the movie, but I think there were some more shots in this article. There looked like there was a behind the scenes shot with Luke and Leia on set together. Now we don't know if they were actually filming in the same scene, but that kind of gave the impression to me like it looked like a bit more of a candid shot where it was the two of them talking with Rian Johnson. And I was like,
it was a candid shot that was staged very nicely.
Yes. But still, I'm like, I don't know what was going on there, but I hope we get to see the two of them in the movie together. It's bad enough that they killed off Han and we never got to have like Han and Luke go on another adventure again before that happened. Yeah. So I hope that Luke and Leia get to see each other.
If I were a betting man, I think they're going to kill Leia off, but I'm hoping against hope that that's not true. But from what I've heard that and I don't want to get into too many spoilerish stuff, but there's a way that they could do it in this movie.
Yeah. They haven't made a final decision as far as we know. They're still working on it. And, filming for episode 9 starts in January, so they've got half a year to figure it out.
Star Wars is a very easy movie to write off somebody as being blown up in a starship. You know, like, and the ship blew up. Okay, everyone's dead. Okay, well, there you go. So we'll just have to see how they deal with that problem right there. But right now we're going to have a few minutes for some questions and some things like that. Before we get into those, let me just give you guys one more chance to we have Jason right here from the Wampa's Lair, Kyle again from Star Wars The Saga Continues, and of course,
and this panel will be on my podcast.
Yes.
So if you want to find it, I do have business cards you can come pick up here on the table. So.
Yeah. And if you're interested in the Animaniacast, I got some business cards as well. I usually charge for these, but usually today, no, totally free. A podcast. Look, you gotta make money during a podcast somehow. This is how podcasters make money. They sell their business cards.
Nobody makes money.
You do your thing, I'll do mine. Let's go ahead and let's get to some questions from the audience. So, or comments. Yes, sir.
I have to dispute the idea that was Luke speaking in trailer. Mm-hmm. That was not Mark Hamill's voice. That was Ben Solo.
In which part are you talking about?
It's time for the Jedi to end?
Jedi have to end. But Mark Hamill said it's him. So he said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark Hamill did at least say he recorded lines for the trailer. Now, he says the stuff with Rey at the beginning, too. But that sounded an awful lot like Luke to me.
Yeah.
I had a friend. I was at Star Wars Celebration. My co-host, when we first saw it, was right in your camp. He did not believe it was Luke. He thought it was somebody else. But I think he's come over to the idea that it's Luke. But we got to remember, Luke plays the Joker, and so he can go dark.
That's why I say it's not Luke. I can actually pick him out when he's doing voiceovers. And stuff.
All right. We shall see.
I was listening to that, and that's not his
voice. All right. Maybe.
Yes, sir.
We'll see.
Oh, and the blue shirt in the back. I'm sorry. Yes, you.
Okay. Going off the idea that they're going to continue with Princess Leia, who would you like to see play the role of Princess Leia going forward?
Carrie Fisher.
Who would I like to see playing the part of Carrie? You know what? I honestly haven't given it too much of a thought. Who is I've heard one person talk about the actress who played the captain in Deep Space Nine. So perhaps her, maybe, but honestly, that I haven't even really given it too much thought.
Yeah, I think that's really just a discussion that, for me, I'll wait till I see episode 8 to get into that more. Cause, you know, it's kind of a moot point if they kill off Leia in that movie or whatever, but I'm like, let's just enjoy the remainder of her work that she did get to do and then kind of speculate about what they might do going forward.
All right.
Let's
get over here real quick. Yes, sir.
Okay, well, you guys said about Luke, you know, maybe going, be changing after 30 years. Mm-hmm. Mark Hamill recently said something and pretty much he had it off his chest and said he did not approve of how they portrayed Luke in this movie.
Okay. Excellent point. Yeah. So Mark Hamill, in case you couldn't hear, Mark Hamill recently came out and said in an interview that one of the first things he did was he went up to Rian Johnson, who's the writer-director of the film, saying, I fundamentally disagree with what you have done with Luke. And then that said, he says he's been
now,
wrong.
Now he says, well, I've been wrong before, and I'll be happy to be wrong again.
That was his initial impression after reading the script, but it sounds like after working with Rian and
kind doing
of working
it,
working on the movie, you know, being directed on set and just kind of having Rian explain more things and realize, you know, where he was coming from, it sounds like he's more on board, if not completely on board with it.
And remember, Mark Hamill's kind of turning into a Carrie Fisher type in that the filter between his brain and his mouth is getting less and less every day.
Yes.
And he's now walking around with a dog too, so,
And Mark is, you know, he's a strange guy.
We love him.
For all we know, his view of what Luke should be could be a punk rocker ninja. I'm serious. the man is an eccentric guy, and
which is why we love him.
And yeah, exactly. And I don't know if he's saying like, you know, well, you've ruined the character. I don't think he's saying you ruined the character. Yeah, he's saying this has been very different than one I've had.
I'm curious when he says, you know, I fundamentally disagree with what you've done with Luke's character. Is he saying you made it too weird, or you didn't make it weird enough?
Yes, exactly. Because for him, he likes to take risks. In fact, he said many times that he would love to see Luke in the next movies go dark and be Dark Side Luke. You know, he said, like, what a great thing that would happen for Luke. So perhaps that's what he was looking forward to, and then he hasn't gotten it. So I wouldn't – it was interesting, but I wouldn't worry too much about it. Yes, sir. Yes.
What do you think about the theory that rather than Rey's parents being somebody in the franchise, that she's just a reincarnation of the Chosen One?
The reincarnation of the Chosen One theory for Rey. I would kind of be cool with that. Honestly, I know most people aren't. I think for me, I kind of am, just because Star Wars has always kind of sampled from mythologies from here, there. I don't think that's going to happen, but I would kind of be cool with that because it would make a little bit more sense of why the saber is calling to her. And there's that connection there. But
My problem with that is the last time we had, you know, if it's the reincarnation of the Chosen One, why is Anakin's spirit inhabiting her? Why did he go do that? You know, because that's weird. He was there at the end of Return of the Jedi, all Force ghosty, you know, and if he decided to sort of re-inhabit a body in Rey, that's just weird.
I don't think it would be like Anakin's spirit reincarnated as Rey, because
I mean
that would be like, for Luke, it'd be like, you were my dad, and now you're my student that everybody thinks is my daughter. That would be really weird.
Some people have said that.
But I think it would be more, at least in my interpretation, I haven't read too much into this theory, but like, if Rey were a reincarnation of the Chosen One, I don't think it would be a specific reincarnation of Anakin Skywalker. It would just more be like the Force being like, hey, I created this Chosen One to do this. Now, sort of continuing with that same prophecy, here's the Chosen One.
Some people think that Star Wars is twists. Like, Star Wars should be twists. And Star Wars has not been typically a movie of twists and turns.
But I think there's a little bit of plausibility to that, only because if she's not Luke's daughter, that's kind of like the second most likely theory in my mind, because I think she has some deep connection with Luke Skywalker, either on a blood relation level, on a Force level,
it would really blow Kylo's mind to say, Kylo, I am your grandfather, to him, to just throw him off.
You, sir, young man.
This is a Battlefront question.
Battlefront 2, this is your question.
Okay. Well, I wish we could do a whole nother panel on this, because I am so excited for Star Wars Battlefront 2. But as far as DLC stuff, see, I don't know exactly what they're going to do, because they're not doing like a season pass like they did for the first game. But they have said that there will be some Last Jedi content added after that movie. I would love to see content from the Clone Wars TV series, because we know that they're going to be adding, that there's going to be prequel content in there, that there will be clone battles. And I think, as far as confirmed planets, there's going to be like Kamino and Naboo, and there had better be Geonosis or I'm going to riot. But how cool would it be to then, for like the diehard fans later down the line, get DLC of like the Battle of Umbara, or, I don't even know, like Christophsis or that second battle of Geonosis from the Clone Wars TV series, anything like that. I would love to see that kind of stuff.
However, back to Last Jedi.
Oh, no, he said, do I think there's going to be any DLC other than The Last Jedi?
Oh, other than The Last Jedi. Oh, yeah. My bad. I missed
it. So hopefully. But they did say that this is going to be more of a full package than last time it was like you get the...
And that's what I'm saying. The game itself could have everything from the movies, and then there's a whole wealth of expanded stuff, you know, Clone Wars, Rebels, all that kind of stuff.
Let's face it. If it's going to get them another $10 out of you, they're going to do it.
yeah.
Yes, sir.
So you asked a question. Mm. That question was answered, I believe, in episode 4. Because what was the famous line that Leia had in the hologram?
Help me, your only hope.
You're my only hope.
But he dies. He is obviously not a new hope. So what is the new hope? Well, it has to be Luke. And as a continuity, and especially with the trailer, I think the trailer has given us a huge connection between those old lines. And Luke said, Rey says, I see light, I see dark. Luke says, there's so much more. So I think Luke is actually, if it's not the end of the Jedi, as like, it's just, we're just going to end it and not have spirituality or whatever the Force stuff is, light and dark, maybe he's reached some other plateau that encompasses all that. Because remember, he had his own temptation with dark side stuff, and he went through that whole process, and maybe he found the balance where there's a certain amount of yin and yang, but maybe it all ties together to a higher level of consciousness. Remember, in episode 1, they're trying to sell us a little bit of
midichlorians?
Christianity mythology, and maybe they're tying it into a higher spiritual thing that goes beyond simple good people, bad people. There's something else beyond all that encompasses all of
it. It's entirely possible.
Okay. Yeah, it's very possible. And as I said, I would love to see some exploration of new levels of understanding of the Force and that sort of thing. I just think that question of who is Luke Skywalker is not necessarily, I mean, you're right that it's answered in episode 4 and that he's the new hope, but I think in terms of what they're approaching for this new trilogy, it's almost like he sort of fulfilled his purpose in that, in the first three movies of, you know, redeeming Darth Vader, overcoming the Empire. He did in that sense, but it's like, and who is he now? Where does he go from there? Right. Who does he become once he is now carrying on the Jedi torch by himself?
Well, the Return of the Jedi, maybe it was Empire, when he left and they said he's being reckless and he'll ruin everything, Yoda ends up saying, but there is another.
Yep, that is true.
And who that other is most likely is Leia, but we shall obviously see. They can change this stuff all the time. Gentlemen, the orange shirt, you had your hand up for a very long time.
What do you guys think about a standalone movie based around the Knights of Ren?
Knights of Ren standalone movie?
That would be cool.
J.J. Abrams said he'd love to see that.
I would love to see that.
If we don't get a lot about them in the sequel trilogy, I think we should get some sort of something, whether it's in another animated show or if it's in a standalone movie. I think we should find out more about who the Knights of Ren are, because they're obviously somewhat powerful if Kylo Ren joined them, if Ben Solo joined them and became Kylo Ren. And they're associated with the First Order, so they have to be kind of high in the pecking order of, you know, sort of dark side Force users. So I'm assuming there's something there.
Yeah.
I just don't know what it is, and I want to.
Well, yeah, I also am very interested to find out more about those guys. And I think it kind of depends on going forward in episode 8 and 9, how much we see them in there. Because if it turns out that they're crucial to this story, then I don't think we necessarily need a standalone film, because I think we'll get a lot of that backstory through the new movies. But if it is something where it's just kind of like, it's part of Kylo Ren's backstory, that's why he turned to the dark side, he joined the Knights of Ren, but now he's with Snoke and kind of doing his own thing there, then yeah, I would love to go back and be like, okay, but these Knights of Ren guys, let's hear some more about that.
Well, our time is up. But if you have additional questions, please come on up and ask
some
good questions.
Yeah.
We have business cards as well for you. And thank you guys so much for coming. Enjoy the rest of your day here at the con. Thank you.
We have business cards for you, but please come and talk to us.
And may the Force be with you. Yeah.
All right. So now that the panel is over, if you're still here, you're curious and wants to know about my experience with the Phoenix Comic Con and Ultra Sabers controversy. As I told you guys earlier, starting Friday. Phoenix Comic Con banned all prop weapons from the convention. Now, sellers were able to continue selling their weapons as long as they remained in their original packaging. Ultra Sabers, unfortunately, has a conundrum because their weapons do not have packaging since they are all custom made. And Ultra Sabers is, of course, a custom lightsaber company who make really high quality, very intricate pieces of art, lightsabers for costumes and that sort of thing. Now, Friday, they were there. They were selling. I did see them. Saturday, they were not. And that was a bit confusing. I didn't think too much of it because I was wondering how many of the vendors were able to keep selling weapons, even though they had banned them from the convention. Then it was Saturday after our panel. We were heading to lunch, and we were walking down the street to where there's some restaurants, and someone walks up to us and hands us this little flyer. And basically, it's one of the Ultra Sabers people who gives us this flyer, and they give several, you know, reasons as to this, you know, what's going on. But basically, they're saying that they were kicked out of Phoenix Comic Con because they would not distribute their products to customers in trash bags. And they gave, you know, various reasons as to why they were initially going to be leaving. They apparently say, they state that they were, due to severely reduced attendance on Friday morning, Ultra Sabers asked for a refund of the booth rental and would like to leave the convention immediately. They claim that Phoenix Comic Con, personnel denied the request and refused to refund any part of the booth rental. And they were told that they were not allowed to leave the exhibitor hall. They then state that Phoenix Comic Con directors requested that they place every lightsaber sold to a customer in trash bags for the remainder of the convention. And Ultra Sabers claims that they did not do not like presenting high-dollar custom-made lightsabers to their customers in a trash bag, and made that clear to Comic Con staff. They sold for the rest of the day on Friday, including the extended exhibition hall hours due to the issues getting people through the door Friday morning with the new security measures that were going on. And they were then escorted, had to take down their booths and were escorted off property afterwards by Phoenix Comic Con staff and police. They then warn every vendor and attendee of Phoenix Comic Con that this can happen to you despite your commitment to the convention, or convention attendees are saving up for the year to visit you in the exhibitor hall. You can be unfairly banned from the show for the way you look or speak, or for standard of, you know, for supporting a standard of quality for your products that the convention directors don't agree with, and so on and so forth. And they blame one of the directors, Matt Solberg, for his ego, for being the ones who kicked them out. The flyer seemed a bit fishy to me to begin with. It was something that didn't really sound 100% truthful. And the fact that they were outside the convention center distributing these to anybody walking by on Saturday seemed a bit suspect to me as well. Phoenix Comic Con was then made aware of this and released their own press release detailing it differently. After the Thursday instance with the gentleman who was arrested, Phoenix Comic Con, in conjunction with the Phoenix Convention Center staff and the Phoenix Police Department, issued policy changes for Phoenix Comic Con, including a prop weapon ban, security line, bag checks, new protocols for vendors, sales of weapons, and prop weapons on site. The Director of Operations, Lee Palmer, and his team informed all vendors of the new procedures, which include the mandate that all weapons be securely wrapped by the vendors prior to sale. The team also held mandatory meeting for all applicable vendors on site on Friday morning to assist with the transition. Ultra Sabers, according to Phoenix Comic Con, did not send a representative to this mandatory meeting. And after they did not comply with procedures in violation of their contract, they continued to sell unwrapped weapons throughout the day on Friday after multiple requests from Convention Center staff, Phoenix Police Department, and Phoenix Comic Con staff. Now, I do remember on Friday walking around and seeing people with lightsabers, unwrapped lightsabers, which I thought was very odd because they had banned all prop weapons. So it was very peculiar to me that that was the case. People walking around, I remember very specifically somebody lighting up his orange lightsaber, looked like he just purchased it, which didn't make much sense to me. Friday night, according to the Phoenix Comic Con press release, staff approached the Ultra Sabers regarding their refusal to comply. Ultra Sabers representatives became combative with Phoenix Comic Con staff and with Phoenix Police Department officers. Subsequently, they were asked to remove their exhibits and exit the building. Ultra Sabers was issued a full refund of the cost of their exhibit space and check, and a check was issued to them on site before they left. This morning, representatives of Ultra Sabers managed to secure badges to enter the premises and distribute propaganda flyers claiming compliance with our procedures and accusing Phoenix Comic Con of refusing to grant a refund. At this time, no decision has been made regarding Ultra Sabers' eventual return to Phoenix Comic Con or other Square Egg Entertainment events. And then they appreciate the patience and understanding of all exhibitors in complying with these new policies to ensure the safety and enjoyment of all our attendees, so on and so forth. Now, obviously we have two very different statements here. And people are going to fall on the side of one or the other instinctively. If you're definitely a supporter of Ultra Sabers, that sort of thing, you're going to want to take their side. If you're sort of against, you know, the idea of the corporate Comic-Con machine, then you're also going to fall on the Ultra Saber side as well. Now, as someone who has attended Phoenix Comic-Con for now 5 years in a row, I can say that Phoenix Comic-Con staff is some of the best that I have seen. They run a very largely, very well-run convention. They've always been very communicative with people when there are issues, when guests have to cancel. They always, you know, issue a release to people who have, you know, signed up, have bought passes. I ended up not getting a media pass this year because I missed the deadline, and I ended up purchasing my own 4-day pass for the convention. And every time that someone canceled or they added a new guest, I would receive an email. They were also giving out information regarding, you know, parking, some of the other events on site, and that sort of thing. The communication from the Phoenix Comic Con staff has always been rather good from an attendee's perspective. And I've never had any reason to question what they say. They've always been very upfront and open. And when there were issues several years back because because of the ways that the convention center was set up for the con, and they experienced an excess of people that they were did not anticipate, and there were issues getting people in and out through the door. People were waiting outside in line for a very long time. And this was about 4 years ago, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. They issued a press release stating, we were unprepared for this. We sincerely apologize for all of this. And they pledged immediately to find ways to resolve that issue for the following year, which they did. They opened up a whole other level of the convention center to spread out some of the exhibitors and the costume groups, which made for flow of traffic and entrance to the convention center much easier. They spread things out quite a bit more to accommodate the larger crowds, and they did a very, very good job of accommodating everyone after that initial problem a couple of years ago. So when we have a situation like this between Ultra Sabers and Phoenix Comic Con, I'm more inclined, personally, as someone who has been there through this convention, through the ups and downs of this convention for, you know, now 5 years, to believe them. And like I said, it's very suspicious to me that Ultra Sabers would say, due to severely reduced attendance on Friday morning, Ultra Sabers asked for a refund of both the rental and to leave the convention immediately. That does not make sense to me, because Friday morning, while there were definitely problems with implementing the new security procedures of getting people in the door, which was resolved by Saturday, and at noon, they just opened up a bunch of hallways and just funneled everybody inside and got everybody through the door much quicker. And it was just really, Friday morning was rough getting in. I'm not going to lie. Phoenix Comic Con definitely got their act together and got that fixed by Saturday, and people were not waiting outside for hours, in the Phoenix heat, by Saturday. So, while maybe the attendance floor was more lightly attended on Friday, that was not because people weren't trying to get in. There were huge lines outside, people trying to attend the convention, and Ultra Sabers would have known that. And so when they say that, oh, because of the reduced attendance, they wanted to leave, that doesn't make sense, because they've been here for 9 years, even 4 conventions less heavily attended than the last couple of years. So it doesn't quite make sense. Their statement seems a bit rash and a bit trying to blame Phoenix Comic Con and get Phoenix Comic Con in trouble for the disagreement. Whereas I am more inclined to believe and accept the statement from Phoenix Comic Con. Now, whether or not either statement released is 100% correct, I'm not going to be gullible and say that, yes, Phoenix Comic Con is 100% correct in the way that they portrayed this, and Ultra Sabers is 100% correct, or Ultra Sabers is 100% in the way that they portrayed it. I'm not going to fall in either of those camps. It's probably somewhere in the middle, but I'm inclined to believe that Phoenix Comic Con is more right than not, because of my experience with them, because of the way things looked to me there on the ground. So hopefully this will all blow over and Ultra Sabers will be back next year. And hopefully Phoenix Comic Con will be able to reevaluate their security and are able to allow prop weapons back in next year. I anticipate that being the case because it is a comic convention and you can't really have, costumes without prop weapons. The costume contest was severely underattended because of that ban this year, and that's one of the highlights for the convention for many people. So I'm going to be very surprised if the prop weapon ban is still in effect next year, which means that Ultra Sabers should have no problems selling their weapons next year if they do come back. They do need to, however, find some way to, have some sort of packaging in case you know, there's a security concern about that sort of thing. Again, now, whether or not it was Phoenix Comic Con offered to provide trash bags to them if they didn't have any packaging on Friday during the convention, I don't know. But it is one of those things where Phoenix Comic Con says that they need to be wrapped or packaged in some way, and then Ultra Saber says that, oh, they told us we need to put it in trash bags. So that seems a little bit murky as to what might have actually been said or done. They probably said it needs to be wrapped or packaged, and if they need to, they can provide trash bags, since obviously the convention center has a lot of those. That might have been what happened. I'm not sure. Neither are giving an exact account of that conversation, obviously. But I hope this blows over. I hope Ultra Sabers comes back next year, because it's always nice to walk through the exhibition hall and just see the booth lit up with lightsabers all around it. It's pretty cool. And I hope there's no ill will for next year. But they did call out one of the convention directors and really attacked him harshly. So we'll see what happens. All right. I've rambled on long enough about that. If you were interested in that, I hope this clears up some confusion that may have been surrounding the Ultra Sabers Phoenix Comic Con fiasco of 2017. If you didn't hear about that, I hope, you know, I've represented the issue well, and hopefully something like this doesn't happen again. Phoenix Comic Con 2017 was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, due to I don't want to call him a crazed maniac, because that's rude and, you know, not healthy. Someone who was suffering from a delusion, ended up bringing weapons into the convention center, you know, making threats, and was arrested, affected the rest of the convention center in a way that no one anticipated, no one expected. It's just frustrating when one person can change the course of a convention for so many others, because of one stupid act. So, all right. That's enough rambling on about that subtopic. We had so much fun with the panel, and this topic got a little bit more serious, so hopefully I didn't completely bring that as a downer. We look forward to having you back next week for our next episode, so stick around. If you have any further questions or want to discuss that issue, please do so in the comments, or tweet us, comments on Facebook, or tweet us, or send us an email. And all that contact information was given earlier. So thank you so much, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.